This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Gun rights activists across the South are turning to their county governments to voice their opposition to gun control. In Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions, supporters reject what they call unconstitutional threats to their right to bear arms. Lisa Hagan's been covering this trend in her reporting. She's a Guns and America Fellow at WABE, and she joins me now. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this trend now across the region, and it's based on what's happening in Virginia. Is that right?
I think, yeah, a lot of gun rights supporters in the region are certainly looking to Virginia. It's one of the more major demonstrations of sort of public backlash to proposed gun laws that we've seen in this region in a long time.
All right, and tell us what's happening in Virginia that has them so concerned.
So, of course, in November, the Virginia State House and Senate flipped to Democrat for the first time in a generation. And this was shortly after, a few months after, the Virginia Beach shooting that claimed 12 lives there. And both the governor and folks who were running for these state legislature offices were certainly running on the issue of gun control, and now that they are in power, they're pushing a number of these measures through.
Now, talk about some of the measures that have actually gone through and that are on the docket.
I think some of the ones that have been advancing include a red flag bill, which I think very quickly is a type of law that allows family members or law enforcement to remove someone's guns if they're deemed a threat to themselves or others. There's a big complaint about that in the gun rights community, saying that it gets rid of due process because there's no sort of court approved trial beforehand. There's also a measure that would limit handgun purchases to one a month, so 12 handguns a year, essentially. There's another that would allow local municipalities to make their own gun laws in cases of special events, I believe.
So what would this, so we've got this move at the state level, and in particular in the state of Virginia, to restrict at some very small level gun ownership. And then what's happening at the county level in response to this?
So we started seeing in Virginia, and this wasn't the first place that we've seen these types of county resolutions, but various counties and cities were passing resolutions to become so-called sanctuary cities or counties, Second Amendment sanctuary cities or counties. And they're basic sort of resolutions that affirm that, you know, the county officials believe in the Second Amendment. Sometimes they'll list have the actual wording of the Second Amendment in there. And then very frequently they will say, you know, we're not going to be directing any of our county resources toward either gun confiscation or what we deem to be unconstitutional laws or infringements on the Second Amendment. And in Virginia, the attorney general there has weighed in saying, you know, these are not resolutions that have the force of law in any way, first and foremost, because, you know, no law has actually come to pass. So we haven't really seen a test of any of these resolutions.
All right. But let's talk about the support for this. Obviously, the legislature flipped. So that's some in the state of Virginia. That is some reflection of public will and public sentiment. Gun control was on the agenda, the political agenda. And yet at the county level, we're seeing this movement. Who's leading the charge in, let's just stick with Virginia?
You know, I think it's a little bit hard to say. These are certainly, it's fair to say that this has been a bit of a grassroots movement. In some cases, there are sheriffs who've stepped up or local county officials who, you know, hear about this and introduce this. But in many cases, you have just local citizens who are hearing about this as this wave has been progressing, you know, happening in other counties and wanting to join in as part of the movement. You also have, you know, this big Richmond rally day that happened on the 20th that got so much sort of national attention was being spearheaded in part by the Virginia Citizens Defense League, which is a local gun rights advocacy organization that has been doing a lobby day every year. And so I think a lot of this energy just happened to coincide around that event in particular.
And as you said, these are resolutions that are being passed at the county level. In some cases, they're being passed. They're certainly being discussed at the county level. Questionable how much force of law they would hold. But then there are some county sheriffs who are really weighing in their support of these resolutions. You talked to Culpeper County, Virginia, Sheriff Scott Jenkins. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, that's right. Sheriff Jenkins has gotten a fair amount of attention for saying that he would deputize citizens of the county, he says, you know, with proper vetting. But basically, his notion is that if you are a sheriff's deputy, which he has the power to you know, anoint his folks in his county, then you would essentially get around the laws that would some of these laws that would govern magazine size or certain types of gun bans potentially that would be coming.
Yeah, here he is talking to you about just that very thing.
The people that we would swear in as auxiliary deputies, they go back to the primary reason I said for doing it. And that is, once they're sworn in as a law enforcement officer, they are then allowed to possess those firearms that are otherwise restricted to the public at large. We as law enforcement officers are allowed to have, for example, that high-capacity magazine weapon that they're looking to restrict.
Culpeper County Sheriff Scott Jenkins in Virginia. I'm talking about Second Amendment sanctuaries with Lisa Hagan of Guns and America. So we're talking about Virginia at the moment. How widespread is this movement, Lisa, regionally?
Regionally, we're certainly watching it begin to pop up in other states around the South. However, I think unlike Virginia, a lot of states around the South are fairly gun friendly and, you know, tend to have Republican dominated legislatures. So the big difference is when you're seeing this pop up in, you know, North Carolina or Kentucky or here in Georgia, it's often preemptive and there isn't necessarily a precise threat, you know, if that's the way you see gun control laws, of losing any of your, you know, gun rights.
Yeah, the threat is much more theoretical. I'm talking to Lisa Hagan, who's been covering the trend of sanctuary cities, gun rights sanctuary cities for Guns in America, and works at WABE in Georgia as well, in Atlanta. We've been looking at the story in North Carolina as well. Corey Valancourt has taken a close look. He's covered these resolutions in North Carolina. He's a reporter with the Smoky Mountain News, and he joins us now. Welcome back, Corey.
Always glad to be here, Frank.
Tell us about this trend that we're talking about here. Tell us about the trend in North Carolina.
Around the beginning of the year, there were only two counties in North Carolina that had passed such resolutions, and they were both in the western part of the state, Cherokee County and Rutherford County. But in the last 2 weeks now, we've seen 20, more than 20, local jurisdictions pass Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. Most recently in Macon County about a week ago, a group of citizens attended and gave public comment in support of such a resolution. Nothing was on the agenda, no vote was taken, and then a day after the Virginia rally on Martin Luther King Day, there was a hearing in Haywood County, and the same thing happened. For over 2 hours, about two dozen folks showed up and implored the Haywood County Commission to put a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution on the agenda, hold public comment, and vote on it.
Who's leading the charge in these resolutions? Can you tell who and what's behind all this?
They're mostly local grassroots groups. There's no official institutionalized support here in Haywood County or in much of western North Carolina. There may be groups that support or like the idea of these resolutions, but by and large, this has come mostly from citizens.
It's interesting, too. We heard from Culpeper County Sheriff in Virginia, Scott Jenkins, a sworn law officer, talking about how he would sidestep the law using deputizing citizens. He didn't say quite how many. But it's interesting because you talked to Haywood County Sheriff Greg Christopher, and he had a little different view. I want to listen to that clip now.
I support our citizens' protected right to bear arms under the Second Amendment and the doctrine of judicial review that grants to the United States Supreme Court and the lower courts the power to determine the constitutionality of any law, and sheriffs do not possess the legal authority to interpret the constitutionality of any law.
Haywood County Sheriff Greg Christopher. I'm talking about the Second Amendment sanctuaries with reporter Corey Valancourt of the Smoky Mountain News and Lisa Hagan of Guns in America. Where was he talking? Where did he make that statement, Corey?
Frank, that took place at the public hearing that I just mentioned. He was the first speaker, and I think in part to the comments of Sheriff Jenkins, now when these resolutions come around, everybody wants to know what the sheriff thinks. And so Christopher got out in front of this entire argument by basically saying he had taken an oath to support the Constitution of North Carolina and the Constitution of the United States, and he will enforce the laws as they exist, not as some wish they might be.
Let's talk about that, Lisa Hagan, because there is a history of this kind of thing where sort of local control, some of it is a dark and a sordid history of local officials and local people taking the law into their own hands. When these resolutions come up at county councils, is the history of this kind of movement taken into account?
I haven't seen very much evidence of that. And I think what we're looking at with this phenomenon with sheriffs that we're talking about is actually the merging of two phenomenons. So we've been talking about this grassroots effort to bring forth these resolutions. And then on the other hand, you have this movement that's sort of parallel to what's happening of what are called constitutional sheriffs. And that's Sheriff Jenkins of Virginia definitely identifies as one. It's this movement that has been led, many people say, by a sheriff in Arizona named Richard Mack. He founded and heads the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And it's he sort of has this idea that, you know, sheriffs are, they have very special powers. They are a law enforcement position that is elected by the people and in its purest form, you know, at the county level. And therefore, they get to interpret the Constitution for themselves, as we've heard. And so Sheriff Mack sort of won a lot of renown in law enforcement circles that support him by standing up to the Brady Bill in 1995. He won a lawsuit against the United States saying that sheriffs and local law enforcement cannot actually be forced to perform background checks on individual gun buyers. But the sort of longer history that you sort of hinted at is when you talk to scholars of the far right, many people say that this idea of sheriffs being this special connected to the people office that gets to bypass laws that are being created and interpret them for themselves. Some historians argue comes from a man named William Potter Gale, who is a notorious racist and anti-Semite who formed a sort of paramilitary group known as Posse Comitatus, and that's Latin for power of the county. He wrote a lot about this idea of the power of the county sheriff and his ability to deputize citizens and to sometimes violently respond to laws that they feel are unconstitutional. Now, I must point out that Sheriff Richard Mack and all of these constitutional sheriffs constantly disavow violence and don't feel at all, they say they're not connected at all to this earlier sort of form of the idea. But that is, many people say, the rhetorical origin of this idea.
Corey Valancourt, North Carolina is one of those states that is now in the control of the Republican Party, at least in the legislature. That control is slipping, and the governor, of course, is a Democrat. And I wonder, you know, whether the argument holds that it could never even happen, that those threats, those laws that threaten gun rights would never even happen in North Carolina. What's the power of that argument?
It seems very implausible that there would be any threats to gun rights in the state of North Carolina. Even conservative Democrats are pro-gun here. And with a Democratic governor who no longer has a veto-proof supermajority to contend with, it's not likely that either house of the General Assembly would be able to even muster something that would threaten gun rights.
Lisa, tell us a little bit about the NRA and how they're reacting to this grassroots movement. Are they embracing it?
I think what we've been seeing is that the NRA is feeling very cautious about this movement, potentially because, like I said, there's a movement of sheriffs who are saying that, you know, we know how to enforce the law, whether or not court, you know, regardless of what courts say. So it's a tricky territory. It touches on some concerning sort of anti-government trends in some way. And we have seen the NRA, you know, the NRA was not involved in the very large Richmond protest. They put on one a week earlier. They've sort of issued lukewarm support for this, you know, standing up for the Second Amendment. But overall, we're not really seeing a big influence of them. And I'm not sure that they have very much control over what's happening.
I want to thank you both for talking with us today. Lisa Hagen is a Guns and America Reporting Fellow at WABE. Corey Valancourt is a reporter with the Smoky Mountain News. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
You can find out more about their reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. And that is our program for today. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hollow-Mormon, and Katie Barron. Jenny Lawson is our technical director, Josie Taras, our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.